looking for something. A new way, a new understanding, a connection, some comfort. You've got questions, and Light on Living puts the spotlight on all the answers so you can shine. Lift and lighten the load of life's challenges and learn simple and easy ways to live a healthy, happy life. You'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you. You're invited to hear new, see different, and feel more as Lisa shines the light on living.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to Light on Living. I'm your host, Lisa Berry. You know what? As the time passes, I'm always excited to get back on air because I always have a wonderful guest who has really taken some, whether it's their own story or their message or insights that they really want to share. And why I bring it to you is because I really love giving you reasons to feel good. And feeling good can be tough in this specific situation because, well, today's about relationships and marriages, and those are things we're in every day, like every single day. So feeling good can be tricky sometimes, and hopefully our guest today is going to let us know how we can feel good in those times a little bit more easy and more frequently. And I just love the title of her book, and I'm going to share it right away first. I love it. I love it. It's Dancing in the Kitchen. And just even that image that we think we see that, oh, you just feel good thinking about it. And actually, you might say, hey, wait a second, Dancing in the Kitchen sounds familiar. Did Lisa already talk about that, her? And yes, I have, because it's Debbie Cunningham. And actually, Eric and I interviewed her back in Musical Chairs because she's also a jazz artist and I love her singing. You guys have to hear her song. And she weaves her songs that she's been singing and playing about and sharing with the world for over a decade, but she's weaved it through her book. And actually, it's what fueled the book, Dancing in the Kitchen. So as I share just a little bit about Debbie, and then we bring her on, honestly, you guys are going to want to stick around for this entire show. I don't think we'll even be able to pack it all in, but it's everything about staying in love for the duration of your relationship, your marriage, your commitment. And oh, I already want to have a big thank you there, Debbie, for that, because I love you for it.
Thank you for having me today.
Oh, you're welcome. I knew that we had a rebook from before, and I'm just so glad we got you on. But everybody, Debbie Cunningham is a recording artist. She's an author and a speaker. She graduated from Temple University with a Bachelor of Music in Voice Performance and has spent more than a decade in the music business as a songwriter and entertainer. She has recorded two albums, the first, a jazz standard album entitled The Rest of Your Life, and the second, an all-original jazz-styled album entitled A Million Kisses. I love that song, with songs about the journey and celebration of committed love, also reflected in her book, Dancing in the Kitchen. She's been married. This is the good part, everybody. They're all good, by the way. This is the fun part. She's been married to her high school sweetheart, Derek, for more than 30 years and is delighted to be the mother of two now grown children. And Debbie spends her time performing with her jazz quartet, speaking at women's and marriage events, giving keynote concerts, and offering performance coaching in her spare time. That doesn't sound like that's too much spare time. She loves the ritual of afternoon tea and frequently pauses for sunset to enjoy God's amazing artistry. I love how you love that too. And she and her husband are enjoying their newly emptied nest, still dancing in their kitchen and starting to cross off their bucket list. They reside in Franklin, Tennessee. So if you're close by, you can always go and see her rather easily at some show or performance that you're giving. So, with all that being said, I know we're going to find out how you do it, but you've tackled a really big one, how to stay in love through the middle part of marriage, like the middle part of those years. And after 31 years, you know. So share with us where we get, you know, love songs are fun. They're love songs. We can write about them easily. But in your book, it's quite different. It goes a lot deeper. Share us your book's different than just a book. So what's the concept of the book? How did you write it, and what can people as they read it?
Well, the concept of the book was really because I was faced with a lot of friendship marriages that were falling apart, of course. And then my husband and I were talking about, you know, how do we continue in our relationship so that that doesn't happen to us? And so I looked at our relationship and what we did to cultivate, you know, long-term love. And also I interviewed couples across the board in all different difficult situations in their marriage, how they stay together through those difficult things instead of divorcing. And that basically became the premise of the book, of really cultivating that longevity in relationship, because it, their struggle is universal for all of us in marriage.
Yeah, it is. And you actually, I love the one thing you say, does any, you ask the question right away in the book, does anyone get married with the intention of divorce? No. So it's a, when you have that lifelong commitment, you've interviewed some really heavy duty ones. And it's not to say that you don't talk about just your everyday struggles, but you have, you dealt with arranged marriages, you dealt with illness. And I think, let's talk about that one just right away, because a lot of people are, you get married whatever age, when you're in your teens, when you're in your 20s and your 30s, and you don't know what disease or illness somebody could, or accident somebody could come across. How does that mean when we make our promise to love them for all that? Like, does that include that?
Of course, yes, of course it does. But I mean, it doesn't mean that it's easy. You know, when I interviewed my friend David about that topic, you know, his wife, he and his wife, of course, were married young in their early 20s. And then I think it was, I want to say 10 years into their marriage, I can't remember the exact date, that she came down, was diagnosed with MS. Within 5 years, they realized this is a progressive form. And so anyone dealing with MS, this is, of course, a great chapter in the book. But he walked with her then for 15 years for this disease, and it was debilitating. And they just had to reassess their expectations, and they looked at what does it take to stay in love long term. And he did say, you know, it's a hard road. There was some, he actually fell into addiction, and we talked through the struggle of caring for his wife. And because he wasn't really self-caring, he wasn't taking care of himself. Often we talk about self-care with women, but in a marriage like this where he was caring for his ill wife, he struggled. And so we talk about addiction and what that looks like in a marriage, what it does. And so there's another story there. And he's had great victory over that as well, and has a whole ministry now to helping people recover from addiction. But in that marriage, I mean, he learned, I said, what kept you married? And he said, my commitment. I promised her to love, honor, and cherish till death do us part. It wasn't what I expected. I didn't think I would have to be, you know, caring for her, lifting her out of the bed at age 40. I thought that would be age 80. But he did. And it's a beautiful story of his commitment and how he cared for her, and how they learned to adjust their expectations, even in celebration with their anniversaries when she was unable to get out of the bed and just things like that. And it's really sweet. But I mean, it's hard. Marriage can be really hard, and life can, you know, deal us some difficult blows. But there is joy to be found even in that, in those seasons, if we're willing to look for it.
You mentioned two big words there, and I want to explore the word commitment with you, but I wanted to share something. Actually, that was the one chapter that that one choked me up a little bit, because my mother, I became very ill when I was only four, and my father was, and I have an older sister, so he suddenly, it was a very similar story when I was reading it, and what hit me hard, it was really choking up, was the expect changes, and date night for them, or celebration, becomes ordering some kind of special takeout food and watching a movie that you've been waiting for. And I actually had to close my little laptop down and walk away, just because I was like, oh, and that was their way of celebrating. And when you make a commitment, it's like what you said, the expectations might change. So in that word commitment, he said it was his commitment that carried him through. If you could wrap up what a define commitment, I guess.
Because commitment really is, I think I have a Webster's Dictionary thing in my book, the definition, but I would say commitment is something that we have said we're going to do no matter what. And I think that, you know, there used to be, you could make a commitment, even a business agreement, on a handshake, because people's word carried weight and they would do what they, follow through with what they said. And I think that just making a commitment to each other and choosing, you know, I know that I need to say this. Sometimes one person chooses not to keep that commitment, and that opens up a whole nother, you know, pathway that we have to deal with. But when two people make a commitment and mean to keep it, my whole point in the book was, how do we keep it? How do we go about when life is hard? And And how do we keep coming back together and pushing forward and moving toward longevity and forever in our relationship? Mm-hmm. So commitment is saying, I do, and then doing all your activities and all the things, the choices you make, surround that I do to push you forward to the next thing, even when you face these tough mountains.
Mm-hmm, those faces. And you actually have something, I love that you call this, you call it the connection point. And I love to talk, and it's funny because, and actually quite a good tie-in here is that I have aligned with an app. It's called the Connection app. And that's the whole point of doing this, is to give couples and everybody, just themselves, giving them a connection point every day to focus on. Now, you have quite a few, like each chapter really gives you practices, and they're not always the same ones. Like there's some similar that run through, but because they're all important. What do you mean when you say a connection point? There has to be a connection point for a couple.
Well, I think you have to have connection points as a couple in order to sustain longevity in the relationship. Otherwise, it's common points in the relationship, common activities.
Okay.
Even if it's, okay, let me give you an example. I have a friend who, they're older, they've been married like 40 years.
Okay.
And she said one of the things they do, it's a ritual, it's a habit. They ride around their property on their tractor at night and watch the fireflies.
Oh my God.
Every night. Yeah, not every night.
Okay, not every night.
They don't have to talk, you know, but it's something they do probably weekly. It might even be more than weekly. The point is, it's a connecting point. You can sit on the front porch, on your porch swing. My husband and I walk and we hold hands. We walk around the block and we hold hands. And even if we're pissed at each other, like a little mad about something, he can say, you want to go for a walk? Yes. And I can still go for a walk, and we can walk, and we can just be present with one another. But those, we don't have to discuss our issue. We don't have, but those are things that are habits in our relationship that bind us together. Those are just simple things. We also ball and dance. You can have a plethora of things you do. But the biggest thing is I encourage couples to do things for fun, which is like dating. But I mean, really having a fun activity that you do together, or an activity that you enjoy together. Because those activities will sustain you when life is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you.
Yeah, they're foundational.
Because I've been there in my own marriage.
Right. Yeah. You haven't had you weren't exempt from all the challenges as well, right?
No, and I think that sometimes people think that when you write a book about marriage, like, oh, they have a perfect marriage, so of course you can write a book. Not true.
Right. Yes, you've got, and you have to come from a place where, okay, wow, what did I do? And I will love to ask you that. So that brings a huge point. So I know that, you know, in different times of my life and relationships and things, like maybe you do have a connecting point, but you're so angry, let's say at something. What do you do when you're so angry, something has come up and you're fighting, what, and you're like, I don't want to hold your hand. I don't want to sit on the couch and watch. I don't, what do you, how should you still do it? Or,
oh, yeah. There's a couple of reasons. Let me tell you a couple of things you should do. There's another part of the book that talks about having a community around you, couples or family or people that you got, that the two of you as a couple are around that can support your marriage. You can go out to dinner with another couple and have fun and breathe life into your relationship and not have to deal with your issue. You've got to learn to separate the issue and call it truth and go do this fun thing. I understand, though, when you're having a hard time, it's difficult to just do something with you and your spouse. So if you can go out with a group and do something fun just to lighten the load, it can breathe new life into your relationship and just give you a breather from focusing on that thing you're angry about. And it's okay to be angry, and it's okay to be frustrated. I encourage you to find gratitude in something about your spouse. They might make you mad in this one area, but if you can just go, okay, this really drives me nuts, but you know what? I'm so grateful they do these things, and try to shift your focus to gratitude. It will make a huge difference.
It's making that word that you use even more perfect, the word practice, because it is, if you practice these things daily and regularly, so that when you are in that heat of whatever challenge, frustration, and stuff, that you have something already created to work with.
Yes.
Those things. Bringing up date night, I love that you said this or wrote, I can't try to think of where I heard this now, but you said date night, it can't always just be dinner, going out for dinner, because you can have a really miserable time out for having dinner, you know, just having to be in that space with your partner. So what are some, what would, how to have fun, no matter what you're doing, whether it is dinner or something. What would the things that bring up fun for a couple?
Well, I think it's different for everyone. This is, I always encourage couples to do it. I tell them this is going to take some research on your part, because depending on where you are in your relationship, when you dated, think about when you dated and fell in love. All of your time, almost all of your time together was focused on having fun together, because you go out, you get to know them through fun activities. You get married, you stop doing that. I don't know why we stopped doing it, but we stopped doing it. And then life challenges. So dating, having fun is different for every couple, because it depends on what you two enjoy and what you enjoy together. But you've got to find activities that you enjoy together, because when you have a fun moment together, it binds you. It bonds you in a deeper level. So because of the serotonin levels that, you know what I mean, that make you lighter and happier, and you're experiencing that with that person, and so your mind relates that happy feeling to the person that you're with. Which is why when you're not doing that and you have fun with someone who's not your spouse, how that can lead to an affair. So.
Oh, my goodness. You just opened a can of worms. Now, we are going to go to commercial in 30 seconds, but that, okay, let's do that for a second, because that what you just said about the chemical release, like this is our biology. This is what our bodies do. When we are dating, that fun, that chemistry, that passion is there. And if we stop having it there, but we're getting newness fun with somebody else, yes, you are correct. That can open the door to some not so great things. And you do share about a couple who've gone through affairs in the book. And when we come back, let's really help people find out, yes, how to maneuver through that. If is there life after an affair, and how to prevent it. When we come back with Debbie Cunningham. Woohoo!
Best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicent, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
Imagine tapping into a power where you could access the ability to transform your views of money, success, happiness, and fulfillment. A power that you could unlock hidden talents, uncover new meaning, and amplify the significance of your purpose. Well, the feminine heart is the source of that power, intelligence, insight, and understanding. Join this new wave of women's leadership that's emerging. Be the woman who knows her greatest power to create goes well beyond the day-to-day striving for results. Be the woman who knows her true power to contribute to the world in significant ways is one that expresses her heart, enlivens her creativity, and elevates her spirit. Rise, amazing woman, rise. An amazing woman legacy book compiled by Marsh Engel, sharing the 8 essential powers of the feminine from 8 influential mentors, entrepreneurs, and change makers that will help you tap into that power. Rise, amazing woman, rise. Your legacy begins by leading with a feminine heart.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt Pure Love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Oh my goodness, I muted myself. Oh, hello, I'm back, everybody. Hello and welcome back as well to Light on Living. I'm your host, Lisa Berry, and I have the magnificent Debbie Cunningham with me here. And we're talking about her book, Dancing in the Kitchen. And it's just a beautiful image that we hold when we're totally thinking about couples. And it's how to stay happy through the tough, struggling years and parts of marriage and that commitment. And I'm actually so glad, Debbie, that the commercial for adopting a pet was just on, because so many of us recognize that commitment of when you adopt an animal, you and then they could get sick, they could do this, but we have this commitment. But I think it's easier sometimes because they don't have to understand why we're grumpy some days or this or that. and really finding fun is just, you know, could be just walking with them or playing with them or sitting with them. But it's much tougher when you've got two individual people really coming together. And before the break, we were going to talk about, it's a tough one. It is about affairs and why they happen, that chemical thing that happens, and how we can prevent them or get through them. So let's just chomp on that one right now.
Yes. Well, of course, we've walked with several friends who have gone through this, but one particular story in the book are dear friends of ours, and they so graciously allowed me to share their story. And one of the things that they said was, you know, cultivating that connection, cultivating that sense of lightheartedness was so important in the relationship, and it fell out. But she said they stopped having that lighthearted fun in their relationship. And before she found out her husband had an affair, she said another friend of hers pointed out to her, "Hey, I noticed that your husband has lighthearted banter with everyone but you, and that's a danger sign." And she said, and so she listened to that. Now, that doesn't mean it's her fault. I would like to say this up front. If your spouse has had an affair, it doesn't mean it's your fault, because each of us is responsible for our commitment in our relationship. And so whoever chooses to have an affair, they've chosen they've made that choice. You haven't made them make that choice, right? We have control of our own behavior, and we're responsible and accountable for our own behavior. But she said to me, but I realized after we started going through this process, but there were times I did not make it easy for him to stay in love with me, you know. And so, and he said, you know, he didn't go to her with his frustrations, but he, you know, allowed that disconnect emotionally to lead him down a path of having an affair. And his was short. I mean, it was like a one-night thing, and then he realized, what am I doing? I'm throwing away my marriage. And in the story. But it was a really long way back, because then he kept it a secret for a few years and he didn't want to tell her. Finally, when it came out, he had been carrying it for a long time, so it was old news to him, but it was brand new to her, and it was a very devastating process. But they both were committed, but he was really repentant. Mm-hmm. That is really key in this story. If the person who has caused the offense is truly, truly, I screwed up, I will do whatever it takes. And that his was the way he was. So I'm going to stop there and let you ask me what you want to ask about the story. I just kind of wanted to set the preface.
I appreciate that. You brought up quite a few things there. Like, first of all, yes, it's not that other person's fault that they had the affair, but it's their own actions. Now, the one thing I was going to ask, say there are frustrations within a marriage, and they can, like in his situation, he didn't feel safe or comfortable or want to go talk to her about this. And then therefore, you know, how do we know when how much should we share, I guess, is the question. How much do we share with our partner, and how much do we think, well, you know what, that could really hurt them if I share that. Maybe I should do this on my own.
Well, I think I know that it's painful to tell your spouse, hey, I'm feeling tempted. Let's just be honest about it. Everybody is tempted at one time or another, I think, in a relationship. Just because you find someone attractive doesn't mean you've sinned, if you don't mind me using that terminology, What, all right? Because you haven't acted on that feeling. Mm-hmm. You are not a glutton if you really want to eat a whole cake, but you only eat a slice. I mean,
right.
You know, we're going to be tempted to do things, and like we're human beings. But we stop ourselves because we know that's not the right course of action, and then we mm-hmm. turn away from that. So we don't act on that feeling of cultivating a relationship with someone we're attracted to. What happens before that, though, is an emotional disconnect, usually between a couple. They have some struggles. They're not talking about it or resolving it. Then they start down a path where they're perhaps roommates. They're not really connecting anymore. They're kind of living two separate lives. It doesn't always happen that way. But this is a scenario that frequently happens. We become busy, and we don't deal with those things, and we kind of just hope it's going to get better, and it never does. I've actually heard people say this. I keep hoping my marriage is going to get better, but it never does. I need to say it will not get better unless you change something that you're doing.
Yeah.
You actually have to change something. It's just like a football team. And I use this as a football metaphor because I heard a man say to me once, or say in the grocery store once, my marriage is like my favorite football team. I keep hoping you're going to get better, and it never does. But in order for a team to get better and win a game, they have to change their strategy, and you have to do that in a marriage.
Yes, I actually loved that one. I was like, oh, they used football because I love football. and I actually like it because of their commitment to the goal and the teamwork and the strategy, and it's so quick, and they can adjust quickly because the plays are quickly. And I think that's an important thing too. I love that you shared that. I wrote down before you brought up emotional disconnect, and I wrote down, you worded it, an emotional separation. And
yes.
That is so, you know, when we get there, that you're far. You've really gone far from that dancing in the kitchen and dating and fun, and but there is a way back, and I love that that's the important thing, and it's just doing those practices that you say. And if a couple isn't in a place that they're able to on their own, I love that you said that, use the other couples that are healthy couples around you. I have to jump in and ask this question. What is the harm that can be done when a couple, whether they are a healthy relationship or not, hangs out with another couple who is unhealthy? What is the harm of that on your own?
Well, I think that it's easy to use the excuse that, well, they're not really attending to their relationship, so we don't have to either. And it can fuel the unhealthiness in your own relationship. There's a quote I use in the book, too. It's one of my favorite quotes, but it's an anonymous quote. And it says, untended fires soon die and become just a pile of ashes. And the truth is, if we don't cultivate the passion in our relationship for physical intimacy, but even emotional intimacy, most affairs happen when the emotional intimacy dies.
Yeah.
And then the couple finds, like we talked about before the break, they connect with somebody on an emotional level, and they find joy being around them. They find that feeling inside them that it's that flutter of love, passion, whatever it is. And then they gravitate towards that instead of recultivating that with their spouse. So if you start to feel that rift happening emotionally in the relationship, it's really important to talk about it. And if you feel like you can't talk about it just with your spouse, then you need to, I encourage couples to go to couples counseling. But I really encourage them, your marriage is worth it. It's worth it to fight for your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Remember why you fell in love. Think about why did we fall in love, and what is happening in our relationship, and how can we move back toward what we had and make it even better?
Yes, and that is such a cool question if we think about it. Because at first there's a lot of lusty attraction feelings going on in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and that's not why you fall in love, though. That's why you fall in lust. And then,
right.
And then what? Why did you fall in love? And that brings me to one of your other scenarios that you talk about. And I love their quote. It's about arranged marriages that end. And their quote was, fall in love with the, don't fall in love with the one you meet, but no. Oh my gosh. How did it go?
Hang on. I will tell you what it says.
Okay.
They say in America, I have it right here. In America, there's a lot of emphasis put on romantic love. But for us, although there is romantic love that can develop over time, the emphasis is on commitment made first. And so in a lot of the in the cultures that do arranged marriage still to this day, which I know is a foreign concept to us in the U.S. and in the North America, probably in many continents. We don't have arranged marriage is not something that we're accustomed to. I love that I got to put this chapter in the book because this couple was amazing, and it was an amazing story, and I was able to share with the world through the book what an arranged marriage looks like today. We have a lot of ideas about what arranged marriage is, but it's come a long way. Mm-hmm. It's not a business transaction. I mean, there might be some a few cultures where it's still like that, but in India, where my friend is from, she said, you know, there's so much that goes into choosing a spouse for your daughter. Mm-hmm. And then the husband's family is also looking for an appropriate spouse for their son. So it's a joined effort. But what was amazing was that she said, and she didn't want an arranged marriage. She was in America. She was westernized. She really didn't want to.
She was in New York.
She was actually in Nashville.
There was a
guy from New York actually that they had tried to set her up with, and that didn't work out. But she lived in Nashville. She's actually she works at a hospital in Nashville. She works at St. Thomas Hospital still, and she wanted to honor her parents. But she knew when she went home, if they hadn't arranged marriage, she would go home and meet this prospective spouse, and then she would return his wife.
Right.
In 3 weeks.
In three weeks,
people.
It's like a reality show here, right? You know?
I know. But it's an amazing story of how she really laid that before God and said, you know, if this is not for me, please show me. But I do want to honor and respect my parents and my culture. And how they made a commitment to love, and then they built love over the years, and they've been married over 36 years now. So
and
it's
happily,
such a beautiful
right?
story. And happily, yes.
Yes, I think that's the key there, because when I read it, and really with that whole quote was, you can learn to love, it's not a forced thing, but it is, if you do put the work in, we can find things we love about everybody. And I truly know, I feel like I love something about everybody, you know, and it is back to the thing about the finding the joy and having the fun, but when we... That commitment, it's like, I feel like that dancing in the kitchen is, you've committed to this song, you've committed to this dance, you hold each other in the proper postures, and the dance will flow and be beautiful, and you can laugh and giggle through it and smile, and just, you know, it's a beautiful analogy when you say that about the dancing in the kitchen, too.
Yeah, and it evokes lightheartedness, which is what I'm hoping to encourage couples to get back to, this lightheartedness in their relationship, because lightheartedness and joy is attractive.
Mm-hmm.
If you're always downcast and you're always angry and you're always frustrated with your spouse, that's not attractive. And so we need to...
Yes. Okay, we lost you there, Debbie. My goodness, I don't know which part we lost you at. But
I couldn't hear you. Sorry, I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me for some reason.
Oh, okay, well, we're back there. Well, where do you remember what part? Next thing, I loved it where we were there, and now I don't remember where we lost you at. But, you know,
we were just talking. We were finishing about the arranged marriage. So,
right, yes, and loving that and commitment, and I love that. And you know, one question I do have is when you talk about the attractive, like you were just talking about what's attractive, what's not attractive, and when you're frustrated and angry or upset or resentful or even distant, that is an attraction. I mean, that's the opposite, isn't it? Distant is the opposite of attraction.
Right.
And so when I'm looking at the what can be attractive and what not. You also have this one story, and I love this because this is a huge one, especially now with the way the world is going, is in one marriage, one man had to deal with his wife becoming his boss. And
yeah.
That is a whole different role than I could only imagine, you know, what he had to go through. But he did beautifully, by the way. I really love how you shared his story there. But when we talk about the roles, like the boss and not the boss, what if that really does that? What if the husband or the woman loses their job and now they're no longer participating financially the way they feel that really makes them feel attractive and taking part? How do we connect still and not feel embarrassed or not as valuable?
I think that, you know, obviously you're going to feel feelings.
Yes.
But feelings are feelings. That doesn't mean they're truth. And I think we have to learn to understand that about ourselves and our heart. You know, we can feel ashamed that we've lost a job. We can feel, he could have felt ashamed that his wife was his boss.
Right.
He chose not to. He said, you know, she has a skill set and I have a skill set. It just so happens that she's the boss and I'm a worker in her company. And he's also very valuable in her company. And he said, but I just chose, we told each other earlier on, let's just leave our egos at the door. And he said to himself, I have to check my ego at the door. This is not a power struggle with my wife. This is us making a company better and doing our jobs to the best of our ability. And but the bottom line is she has the last say in our in this business. Right?
I
and
love
so
that.
He just chose for it not to be a power struggle.
It is. And you know, as we will sneak away to commercials, but you know what? I love that. Where check your ego basically when it comes to love. Like just be honoring and always, you know, put your partner up and show them what value they bring into yourself in what area. And I love that. Let's check our egos at the door when it comes to love. And when we come back, more and more on how to get through those hard times of struggles and keep a marriage alive and staying in love.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Tune in to the Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more. All to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Mind connected to the heart, connected to the love, connected to the soul. Perfect way to get to know your partner, yourself, and love more deeply. Download and join today.
Mind connected to the heart, connected to the love, connected to the soul. I'm connected to you, connected to me.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human. And she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg roll showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Guys, we're getting some really helpful tips here from Debbie Cunningham, who is the author of Dancing in the Kitchen. And she also, I want to make sure I share this, is that you also have this beautiful album, jazz album, A Million Kisses, and you share a song for each one of your chapters. The lyrics are right in there. And see, now they have to get your CD album and the book so they can play it while reading. And I suggest that people read it together. Okay. Actually, what do you think about that? Do you find that couples are reading your book together?
I don't think couples are reading it together. What I have found is that mostly the women are reading it first, but then what several husbands told me is that they saw such a change in their wife, like the way their perspective was, that then they wanted to read it.
Oh.
Which I found fascinating, but that's exciting.
Yes, yes. So we're tracking the men in there. Come on and read this. And they go, Well, interestingly enough, that my next topic I want to touch on, which is really neat, it is about leadership and example. It's when women become moms. And I'm not saying that dads don't become their dads, because they do, but what, boy, that's a whole different stage for a marriage to go through. Having children, it's probably really, you know, unsexy at first. And how do you stay sexy and connected when, you know, the mom's like really tired and feeling all different shapes and sizes all going on, and a different pull requirement for, you know, from somebody, their attention is going elsewhere. How do we stay connected during that time?
I think that during whatever season it is, but I'll include that, you know, after having a baby. I mean, there's seasons where we just have to give space to our spouse to, like, regroup, you know, whatever they're going through. Husbands and wives who are caring for children together, I know that there were just seasons that I was exhausted. And but my husband was so great to be a part of that with me. And he also was tired. And that was a season of life that we just gave each other a lot of grace, because we both retired from the kids, you know, being up at night. And I think that self-care is really important. I think that you can't ignore your marriage relationship and cultivating that. You need to talk about expectations ahead of time. You need to talk about expectations when you're in the middle of it. And in any season, not just being a mom, but a mom is a big season of where there's this huge new expectation of you. And you might be, you know, you're not getting a lot of sleep, and it's hard. And my husband was great in that he wasn't always getting a lot of sleep either, because where he could get up and help take care of the baby, he would. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I was nursing, so he couldn't see the baby, but he would do other things. And so he kind of partnered with me in that, in that season.
Thanks, Derek.
We both were tired. Yes, absolutely. Thank you to my sweet husband. But what I want to say, so that season and other seasons, you know, we need to give each other grace with whatever we're going through. You know, if you're going through a grief season or something where one of you is really in a loss process, whether it's losing a job or losing someone in your family, you know, that affects our life together as a couple.
Yeah.
And I think that self-care is important in all of those seasons. And we also need to give grace to one another and find new ways to connect. That, you know, when you have a baby, it's hard to get out and get a date and have fun. Although I do want to say there are great companies out there where you can order date night in a box. Like Unboxed Love is one that I support, and they are super. You can find a link on my website.
What's it called? Unboxed Love?
It's called Unboxed Love, and they will send a date night box to your door, they're all themed. They send them out once a month, and so it's just something you can do as a couple. If you can't get out, then you can have a date night at home, and they have really cool products in the boxes and all that. Not to make this a commercial about them.
I love that. Actually, that is so cool, because I'm thinking of with the Connection app. I mean, I'm going to have to connect everybody. That sounds great. Thank you for saying that. But what a neat idea, and that people have recognized that it is hard, and couples do need that.
Yes, and you still need to find ways to connect even if you're in that season. It just might look differently. Again, I'm always encouraging couples, like, it doesn't have to look the same in every season of life.
Right.
Sometimes it can just be putting the kids to bed and having a romantic dinner after they're asleep just for the two of you while you have 2 hours of respite, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to learn to adjust our expectations to be flexible, I think.
It is. I love that. Adjust the expectations. That is a very cool one, because you could have one expectation going in, and then you went, wow, that was, I don't know where I was coming from. And we actually get those expectations from what we've been modeled to, like what we've seen our parents and our friends.
Right.
So, and you said, and it's right. And that's actually kind of neat. That's where I wanted to take that in the next thing, is that you really share. This is something that I do, not just in like romantic relationships, but all my friendships and stuff, is to stop for a minute if I am feeling a certain way and it's not working out and I am struggling or challenging, and think, well, what is it from their perspective? And that opens up a whole new world if you can do that with love.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do, so that was it. How would you suggest that we go about getting that as a daily foundational practice, looking at it from somebody else's perspective?
Okay. For something that's difficult, is that what you're asking? Something
you're in the middle of an argument maybe something that you just don't agree on, or you think, wow, and you're taking, there's your ego stepping in, and it could escalate to a fight or an argument or a distancing.
Right.
But how do we prepare ourselves enough to open our hearts to look at that other person's perspective without, you know, standing our ground?
Well, I think that, number one, we need to learn that it's okay to agree to disagree, that we do not have to see everything eye to eye, and we can still develop a deep friendship or a love relationship, even if we don't agree on everything. My husband and I don't agree on anything, but there are things that you're going to disagree because you both come from different families of origin. You both have had a whole life of experience before the two of you become one. So you're going to think about some things differently. But I think the big key here is listening, learning to listen. And honestly, we're, as a culture, we're not good at it at all. We are in a society, let's just say right now, we're in a society where we have this constant barrage of information. If it's not audio in our ears, it's just what we're looking at on our phones. I mean, it's nonstop, you know, input into our brains. And we have got to learn, I believe, to stop and listen to our spouse or a friend. It can be any relationship. When you're in a discourse, you need to hear what the other person is saying. If you really listen and be inquisitive, curious, ask them good questions, because that might lead you to understand why they have the perspective they have. And it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. Just because they have a perspective doesn't mean it's right. But it also doesn't mean it's wrong. But I really think we're so focused on being right. And sometimes it's just better to be kind than to be right.
Yeah.
The rightness becomes a power struggle in any relationship.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that you reminded myself and everybody. It doesn't matter whether it is right or wrong, what your judgment is of what they're saying. It's just what matters to them and that you care. And you actually bring up Languages of Love. I love that book. I read it. One of my good friends, Elaine, gave it to me 15 years ago. Now, just bring up that book, and I know, again, we're not commercializing, but this book really helps people. Why is it important to learn what language of love our spouse is speaking?
Well, Gary Chapman wrote this book, and it's an amazing book, and I read it years ago, but it's come back many times to be a tool for me. If you're doing something for your spouse all the time and they aren't appreciating it, you're probably speaking your own love language.
Mm-hmm.
There are five different love languages. Physical touch is one, which is usually a primary one for men, but not just men. I mean, women want physical touch too. Acts of service, words of affirmation. I can't remember what the other ones are off the top of my head right now. But the point is, if your primary love language is physical touch and words of, and acts of service, so you might fix the faucet for your wife and fix things around the house, and you think she's not very appreciative. That's not speaking love to her.
Right.
But she is, gifts or words of affirmation and quality time. Those are the other ones. So if she needs quality time with you and all you do is fix things in the house, she doesn't feel loved.
Right.
I know that's crazy, but just like if a woman doesn't want to be intimate as much as a man wants to be intimate, he feels unloved because that's his love language. So we have to learn to value each other and to fill each other, speak each other's love language to fill each other up with love, because I promise you, if you're speaking your spouse's love language, they will be more responsive to you in every aspect of the relationship.
Yes. And I think that's so interesting, because I'm thinking about each one of those five, and I'm thinking about how dancing in the kitchen, which I love that title again, is it kind of does a lot, because it is spending quality time, it is doing an act of service, you know, and it is a touch thing, and it's also, if you're singing the lyrics, it's also like you're talking, like it kind of gives a lot of it. think everybody should dance.
And it's physical activity.
Yes, yes. And that has so many endorphins and good stuff with it. Now, you literally, so with this is a new, fresh book out, and it's just, you know, on its own little roll here. Right now, how are you? You're going out and doing talks and bringing the book with you or singing songs with you. How are you helping couples with this?
Oh, well, and I'm also teaching a ballroom dance step. Like in some of the book signings that I'm doing around the country, I'm doing one in Florida, in Tampa, Florida. We're doing a Barnes & Noble, a big event there where I'm teaching them a ballroom dance so that they can learn to do it in their own kitchen or living in the wherever. Because what my goal is to really encourage couples to connect again on a different level and to bring and infuse fun back into the relationship. So that's what I'm doing. I'm going around talking and doing book signings and doing small concerts. You know, I'm available. They can contact me on my website.
Yes. Do you have videos of the people dancing or yet?
Oh, I do have some from one of my release parties, so I can show you that, but. Yeah, so we're getting there. We're getting all these video clips so we can get them on the website.
Oh, I just love that. I wondered, you know, in a year's time right now, we'll have another show and we'll say, how many, you know, a million kisses. We could say a million dances have been danced by these new couples connecting, you know.
Yes, that would be so exciting.
Well, I love that with your story specifically that you've been married to your high school sweetheart. And I share this, my parents got married just out of high school as well and stayed together right until she passed a couple years ago now. But my dad, I swear, is still in love with her, you know, whether she's here physically or not. And she was sick for most of their marriage that I saw them together. And you know what, they really shared what you're talking about and what you share about is, maybe, you know, she couldn't be so physical, but they could just hold hands up while they sat on the couch together or those little things. And I think that's what I really love that you're sharing with people is that it's bringing it back to very, because it can get hard and challenging in relationships. But if you go back to those simple things and really remember and what you said about fun, the fun is so good, is that when yes, my best advice is everybody gets this book and reads it because it's a really good one to go through. But can you really save every marriage? And that's where I want to leave us with hope or no hope. Is every marriage savable?
I think that every marriage where two people are committed to making it work is savable. But I know that that's not always the case, that everybody, there's not always two people. If there's one person, they can make a difference. One person choosing to love well can make a difference in the relationship. But it takes two people to make a relationship work and long term. So I never give empty promises. The book doesn't have empty promises, but it does have practices and things that you can hang your hat on to make changes in your relationship.
Yes. And, you know, and whatever that looks, it's the most important thing is to always just keep the love for yourself and for the other. Through whatever lifetime you share. And just on another note too, you shared about, I love you did this. Let's put the focus back on the romantic story underlining things. You say, you know, even with Cinderella, we only hear up until they get married, but then we don't hear about Cinderella and the prince's marriage. And then we also, when we're going to movies, they sometimes focus on the affair, but what about the marriages that last? So you just really bring a whole, spotlight to be shone on commitment, and I love that, and I wanted to thank you for that. And is there anything in the last closing remark that you'd like to share or invite to or connect with everybody?
No, thank you, of course, for having me on the show again. I just so enjoy our chats. But they can find me at debbiecunningham.net, and I have resources there for Dancing the Kitchen. They can find a link to Unbox Love there. They can get download free music and find where my book is sold and everything on that. They can connect with me there at debbiecunningham.net.
I just love that. Well, thank you so much, Debbie. And thank you for sharing about Unbox Love. I'm going to go check it out right now, actually.
Awesome.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If we've helped you or Debbie's helped you, you're going to get the book and read it. If you want to share, we would love to hear from you how you're reconnecting with your spouse and bringing back the fun and love and dancing in your kitchen. So thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Bye, Debbie. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.